Recorded of the candidate forum for the candidates for the Board of Education here in Dearborn, also the Henry Ford College Board of Trustees at the same time. They serve in both positions. And so, except for the opening and closing, which we had to delete for the sake of time, here is the entire forum presentation. 10 of the 11 candidates did show up for this. So take a good listen.
To speak out for a working class policy and a working class fight in this economic crisis. We see attacks on the standard of living of working people to pay for a crisis that we did not create. A big part of that attack has been to our schools. Public money is being sucked out of the schools at all levels to be used for private profit. It's wrong, it's hurting our system, and it needs to stop.
Thank you. Ms. Karkaba, your opening statement.
Good evening. I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters for having this forum this evening. My name is Ginwa Karkaba, and I'm a lifelong resident of Dearborn, Michigan. I have three children who attend the Dearborn Public Schools. I am currently serving my fourth year on the PTA Council Board. I am the Reflections Chair, which is a art program for kindergarten through 12th grade. I began my advocacy over 7 years ago, and I realized how imperative it was to be involved directly in our schools, to be an advocate, and to be proactive. Being involved in our schools, each individual school, it's its own separate entity, and to understand the issues that occur is extremely important.
Mr. Mead?
Good evening, and thank you also to the League of Voter Women for putting together this forum. My background is I have a doctorate in guidance and counseling and a minor in psychology. I have been in education for 40 years. I started at Montgomery College as a teacher, a counselor, and a dean of students. And then I was invited to work at Henry Ford College, and I worked here for 23 years, 22 years as the vice president of student services, and 1 year as the acting
Thank
president
you, Mr.
of
Mead.
The college.
Mr. Paulson?
excuse me. I thank you for allowing me the chance to attend here and speak on my behalf. I'm a fourth generation Dearborn resident. I have one child that's in Dearborn schools. I also have a two-year-old that will soon be attending Dearborn schools. I'm also a Wayne County Sheriff's deputy and a licensed residential builder. I'm basically running because I've seen what poor education has done to society, just working in the jails. The kids by every year get younger and younger coming into the jails. I believe our education system is the foundation of society as a whole. I believe creating a prosperous society starts with that very foundation, if the foundation is weak.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Ms. Petchlikoff.
Good evening. I'd also like to thank the League of Women Voters for this opportunity to introduce myself. I have two children that went through both the Dearborn Public Schools and Henry Ford Community College system. I've served 1 4-year term on the school board from 2008 to 2011, and prior to that I was elected and served from 2005 to 2007 as a city charter commissioner. I'm currently the president of the Dearborn Federation of Neighborhood Associations, and I chair the City Beautiful Commission, and I'm currently a member of the city's rental task force and neighborhood, president of my own neighborhood association, and for many years I've served on in advisory capacity on a number of task force and committees for both the school district and the city. I'm a past member of the HFCC Community Advisory Committee, the 21st Century Schools Committee, PTA.
And thank you. Ms. Adia?
Salam alaikum. Peace unto you. Also, thank you to League of Women Voters for hosting this school board forum. I'm Michelle Adia, school board candidate, who is a lifelong resident of Dearborn that graduated from Fortson and the University of Michigan Dearborn with a Bachelor of Art in Education. I'm a highly qualified and experienced teacher with a professional education certificate. Through the years, I have been nominated, elected, or appointed by my superiors and peers to serve as a rep, officer, board member, and commissioner within Dearborn in Southeast Michigan. I'm running for school board so that I can serve as an advocate by working with our board members, community organizations, and state legislature in order to uphold accountability, equity, equality, and citizenship for all in the Dearborn Public Schools and Henry Ford College.
Thank you. Mr. Bartles, your opening statement.
Hi, I'm Roger Bartles. I would like to thank the League of Women Voters also for having this forum. It's very important for people to be informed as to who their candidates are. I've worked for the school district for over 30 years. I have been a resident of Dearborn for 42 years. I have three children that are now finishing their last years of college, the youngest two, and have a lot to say that I bring a lot of institutional knowledge from being employed here so long. I understand the system. We've done a lot of great things, but we can always improve. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bazzi?
Good evening. I want to thank the League for hosting this event this evening. My name is Miriam Bazzi, and I'm respectfully requesting your vote come November 4th. I'm a product of this district and all the opportunity that it has afforded me. I attended and graduated from the Dearborn Public Schools. I attended Henry Ford College, received my bachelor's from the University of Michigan Dearborn, and went on to Wayne State University Law School, where I received my Juris Doctor degree. I have three children who are currently enrolled in Hague Elementary, and as a parent, I have a vested interest in making sure that my children receive the best education possible. As a taxpayer, I have an interest in making sure my tax dollars are being used effectively and efficiently without compromising education. I work as an assistant Wayne County prosecuting attorney, and what that has done is through my work, I've learned how important it is to make sure that kids are not only given a proper education, but we're raising children who will be productive members of society. I'm here before you today asking for your support because I believe we can work together to continue to improve our schools.
And thank you. Ms. Hyder?
Good evening, and thank you for having me, League of Women Voters. My name is Nafila Hyder. I am a candidate for the Board of Education. I am a lifelong resident of Dearborn. I'm also the product of Dearborn Public Schools and a graduate of the University of Michigan. I own a small business in Dearborn, so I know the importance of prioritizing, budgeting, and employee morale. I have two children in Dearborn Public Schools. I come from a hardworking family, and being one of the older siblings, I've always been the go-to person. Being the go-to person has taught me so many lessons. I'm very active in our community, whether it's the PTA or other service clubs. I have always served in leadership capacity. I have an education from Dearborn. I own a small business in Dearborn. I've always had a passion to serve my community.
Thank you. Ms. Herring.
My name is Mary Ann Herring. I've been a teacher at Henry Ford College for 39 years and a Dearborn resident for 25. Several generations of Dearborn residents have come through my classroom, and through them I have become familiar with the Dearborn Public Schools. I'm running along with Kenneth Janot to be a voice on the board for students, parents, teachers, full and part-time, and all the support staff, those who do the work to make the schools run. All of these people are adversely affected by the cuts to public education that are part and parcel of the economic and political policies of this society. From federal to state budget cuts, every city is trying to divide up yet smaller amounts of money going toward public education. We shouldn't accept that this is our only choice. The money's there. So I would try to organize people in Dearborn to stand together along with people in other communities and demand that public monies go for public education and services, not for private corporations and banks.
Thank you. We'll now begin the question portion of our forum, and we're going to start our first question with Ms. Karkaba. Okay. 30-second pause.
So, none of me was on?
Should I repeat what I said?
Yeah, just pick it up right from where you started.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Do I have to wait for a cue? We'll now begin the question portion of our forum, and we'll begin the first question with Ms. Karkova. What is motivating you to run for the school board? Do you have an issue you especially care about?
Thank you for that question. I'm very passionate about our schools. For over 7 years, I've been involved in the PTA and directly involved in understanding the issues that our teachers are facing, that are the issues that are facing our district. I understand that it takes communication and dialogue to understand each individual school. Under the Dearborn Public School umbrella, we have over 30 schools. However, we have to understand that every single school is a separate entity with its own community. So in essence, we have to talk to our educators. What can we do for you? What issues do your students have? What strengths do you have? How can we work with you? We need to be more involved, more proactive, being more of a presence in our schools. So
our educators, everybody who is invested understands that we care and we know the inner workings of what our district is all about. And communicating, that's unbelievably the most important thing, and letting everybody know that we need to be an advocate for our community.
Thank you. Mr. Mead?
Same question.
Would you like me to repeat it?
I would.
What is motivating you to run for the school board? Do you have an issue you especially care about?
Well, what motivates me to run for the school board is strategic planning. It seems to me like the responsibility of the board is primarily to make sure that there is an adequate strategic plan and that follows the budget, that is within budget. But the strategic plan should end up being focused on student success. And the student success is kind of measured by the kind of knowledge and skills that students gain in order to get into the economy. Also that they become good critical thinkers, that they're able to decision make, that they're able to problem solve, and that they're able to reason and to know where to go to get the information to make those kinds of decisions. Also, I'm concerned that out of 7 seats, there ought to be at least one seat that has some interest about the college. So I have been working at the college a number of years, and I have attended over 300 board meetings. And I think it's time that there is more attention paid to the college.
Thank you. Mr. Paulson?
I'm running mainly because I feel the environment within the schools need to be improved, specifically safety. Our children, you know, that's your greatest asset. You want to protect that at all means. I believe there hasn't been enough put in place to do that. I believe contract security guards isn't the key to it. I believe we need to incorporate more law enforcement in the schools to protect our students, especially due to the fact with the government so-called labeling us as a city with major terrorist ties. That's painting a large back on the target of our students, and I believe that we need to protect them in the event somebody that may not be in their right mind decides to take out whatever imagined revenge on them. And I also believe that the college needs to take in more of a corporate involvement, because they're the ones that say what they need, and the students need to learn what their future employers are going to require of them.
Thank you. Ms. Pashlikoff.
Well, like everyone else here, I have a vested interest in the success of our schools, as it directly impacts so many things in our community. The strength of a city is always reflected by the strength of the quality of its schools and its education programs. I'm the only one sitting here who actually has 4 years of board experience to replace the outgoing members. And I believe that my background and my experience with community service gives me a great deal of insight to what it is that we need to continue to protect and support the quality of our educational system.
Thank you. Ms. Audia.
I would like to see an increase in active participation within our community, both in the Dearborn Public Schools and Henry Ford College. And with my 19 years of community service, I am a very active board member in my community, and I have served as president, vice president, treasurer of many organizations here in Dearborn. And I would like to offer my services, my time, and my talents to help encourage active citizenship, a proactive citizenship with our learners, and to help keep it strong and keep Dearborn one of the best cities in our nation.
Mr. Bartles?
I've decided to run, as I'm getting ready to retire, to give back to my community that has treated me so well for 40-some years. The schools are doing a good job. They have programs in place for security. They have education in place. We're in the top 13th. But we're in the top 15th in the state. But being in the top 15th doesn't mean we just sit around and try to get better. Everything can get a little bit better. The Henry Ford Community College, is a very, very vital part of the Dearborn Public Schools. It has always been that and should continue to be that. We need somebody who represents everybody on the school board.
Thank you. Ms. Bazzi?
Thank you. I chose to live in Dearborn because of the school district, frankly. I have 3 children. I wanted them to receive the same type of education that I received. When I saw that there were 3 open seats on the school board, I figured this would be a great opportunity to get involved in my children's education in a way that would benefit not only my children, but all the children in the district, because I believe I have a varied background and experience that I could significantly contribute to the school district. And as to the college, I do have experience at the college. I worked with Partners Plus, which was a program that helped minority students transfer from the Henry Ford Community College to four-year institutions. So I understand the importance of the role of the college, and I believe that I could use that experience and expand upon it in my role on the school board.
Thank you. Ms. Hyder.
I have so many reasons why I ran, but I'm going to simplify because of time. I basically have a passion for giving back to my community. I feel that I owe it to the district and to the community to give back a portion what was given to me as a Dearborn student. I believe that our district is very successful. I have a business background that allows me to deal with budgets, and I understand the public school process from a business perspective as well as a mother's perspective, or as a parent's perspective as well. We have funding issues, and we have parent involvement issues, which is one of the biggest issues for me. I really feel that we need to increase parent involvement and work on that a little more.
Thank you. Ms. Herring?
What's motivating me to run is anger. Anger at the attacks on public education that have just gone through the entire system, including Dearborn. When I campaigned, I talk to people in different school districts. I happen to live in this one and can serve in this one. But whether you're talking about cuts in teachers, cuts in services, cuts in after-school programs, every time parents, teachers, and taxpayers are and custodians and food service workers are asked to give up something. And I think the line has to be drawn, and I think somebody has to say enough is enough and be a voice on the board that says when they come and ask us to cut, say no. It's not going to happen. Find the money somewhere else.
Thank you. Mr. Deneau?
A similar answer. I see attacks on the living standards of working people, and the schools is a big part of that. We've seen cuts to the public schools, attacks, money drained away to private interests, corporate interests, profit-making interests. And the school budget has been cut at the state level, coming down from the federal level, all while huge corporations, including Ford, are making record profits and enjoying more tax breaks and grants. And I would do my best to help lead a fight in our community against any of those cuts and a lot more. I would tell people that there is no reason for any of those cuts, and I would do my best to help people do whatever they're ready to do to push back and defend our schools against further attacks.
Thank you. We'll start our next question with Mr. Mead. How can we better service the new students from other countries with language barriers?
Well, at the college, we have the English as a Second Language program, and we also have a program for students who are coming into the community speak another language and need to learn English Institute, which is on the in the college campus. I'm not sure what they do with the P-12 in terms of providing any kind of service for these people, but the college does reach out to them.
Thank you. Mr. Paulson?
I believe that's an important issue here in Dearborn. Excuse me. I believe that we need to, if possible, find the funds to institute a K-12 second language school. That way their second language students could have all the resources streamlined to them so they can better compete with the students at the other school. And then once they're able to finally become at the level where they need to be to compete with the other schools, they can be assimilated throughout the rest of the district. Because I can't imagine coming from another country and sitting in a classroom where nobody else speaks my language except a few people, and just the fear that would cause, I couldn't imagine. I wouldn't want to put that on anybody. I believe Access taking that $12 million grant, I believe that can help be used to fund such a program, and that's how I believe that can be addressed.
Thank you. Ms. Petchlikoff.
Well, we already have a pretty stellar English as a Second Language program in place. We use Title I funds to pay for most of those services. We've beefed up our ability to identify those students who are in need of those services as they come into the community, and we are trying to exit them as quickly as possible when they become proficient at English to assimilate back into the normal classroom. I think isolating them from the rest of their school community would be a disservice to them. They really need to be involved in their neighborhood programs, not in a separate building. I would never consider that as an option for these students, because the more they get to practice amongst their peers, the better they become able to use the language in a conversant way. And it's up to our teachers to make sure that they get the content and academic language down, and we're working very hard in this district in order to improve that section of the component.
Thank you. Ms. Audia, could you please repeat the question?
Sure. How can we better service the new students from other countries with language barriers?
First of all, we would need to sit down with all of those students and assess them and log their needs to make certain that we are accommodating them properly. And then secondly, we should have the teachers and the coordinators and the administrators at each school where the children are come together with the families and have regular meetings. For example, I would suggest weekly meetings and log the progress of the children. Offer ESL program, which we have, and offer technology, perhaps combined services. For example, you could offer ESL, and perhaps I would offer technology as an option.
Thank you. Mr. Bartles?
Dearborn Schools has an excellent ESL, English is second language program. They have identified the students that need it. Keeping the students in an environment where they're hearing and talking and conversing with peers is very important, because they will learn faster. They will learn English because that's what the other kid is speaking, and they want to know what he's saying. They will also, we also have in place several programs to identify the kids that have unfortunately fallen slightly behind their grade, and we have programs in place to help get them back up to speed. We also have to understand that in order to do more programs, which we should, we have to find the financing.
Thank you, Ms. Bazzi.
I really believe Dearborn serves as a model in this particular area, not just for Michigan, but nationwide. What Dearborn has done with the ESL program and how it's gone, I believe, above and beyond in trying to reach out to those students and trying to get those students proficient and teach them the English language, I think is truly commendable. With that said, there's always room for improvement. I think one of the best ways that we could continue to work on that is maybe more dialogue with their parents and getting their parents more involved. They've obviously come to this country for the opportunity that this country affords, and I think that if there's anything that we can do, maybe more involvement with their parents would be a good starting point.
Thank you. Ms. Hyder.
I can speak from somewhat of a personal experience. The school which my children attend, we have a lot of newcoming families who don't speak a word of English. And along with the ESL program that's at the school, we as a PTA have provided services to the moms. We, you know, bring in the parents for meetings, we speak to them, we try to encourage them to, I don't think this microphone's working, we try to encourage them to learn along with their children. This really helps them. We also have grants available that we're looking out for to help the families, help the children. This all goes back to the parent involvement that I was speaking about earlier. But we do have a great ESL program. We have grants out there. There could be a great program put together for helping the families and the students to grow.
Thank you. Ms. Herring?
When we met with the administrative team here at this building, I learned that there are 34 languages spoken in Dearborn, and people from 64 countries. And I learned that there were presently 300 teachers associated with the English as a Second Language program. I have no idea if that's enough. When I look at the numbers, 34 languages, I would say I would defer to people who are language teachers and people who are really proficient in the resource programs surrounding language acquisition for second or third language. Some of my students speak four languages, sometimes five, and English is the fifth. So I would defer to the experts, but I would also say my guess is we can use more teachers and more resource personnel, because you have to have a very low ratio, student ratio to the teacher.
Thank you. Mr. Janot?
Yeah, it's kind of popular among education reform folks to say that we don't need a low teacher-to-student ratio, but I would definitely argue the opposite, that we absolutely need a low teacher-to-student ratio, and the lower the better, the more individualized attention that all students, second language students as well as other students, excel with the individualized attention from well-trained teachers who have resources at their disposal and have the time to be able to dedicate to the individual students in front of them. And the more that we can do that, the better it will be for those students. And as I said, the money is there, the resources are there, we just need to demand that it get down to us.
Thank you. Ms. Karkova.
Our community has grown exponentially, and so has our district. And students from middle, elementary, and high school are subject to the ESL programs. Understanding that we have to have teachers in place to implement these programs, to have the right resources in each individual school is absolutely imperative. When we have class sizes that are 30 plus, mm-hmm. you have to weed out which kids need those special services. Those services need to be available, specialized learning, one-on-one. We can't overwhelm our teachers. We have to understand that our district offers a wonderful ESL program, but we have to make sure we keep implementing the resources that is needed with the growth, rapid growth every year of our district.
Thank you. We'll begin this next question with Mr. Paulson. Currently, the partnership between the Dearborn Schools and the Dearborn Police Department is the deployment of three school resource officers for the entire school district. Is this adequate? Please discuss what you believe to be the role of the police department within the public school system.
No, I don't believe it's adequate. A year after I graduated high school, there was a security guard caught selling drugs to students at Etzel Ford. I believe you should have trained law enforcement officers that are veterans in the schools, and I believe one of the greatest ways to do that and the cheapest ways to do that is contract out with the Dearborn Police Department, retired officers who are already receiving a pension and health benefits, pay a simple rate of $20 an hour, which would be cost effective, which I'm assuming is probably what they're paying private security guards as it is. And then they also have the experience of 20 something years within working with the community. And also many of our local police officers are bilingual, so they can help diffuse conflicts with students that have language barriers between the two different students better than somebody that is not bilingual.
Thank you. Ms. Petchlikoff?
Well, recently I just met with the police chief as president of the DFNA, the Federation of Neighborhood Associations, because I had a group of parents from my own local elementary school, Oakman, who had some concerns and wanted to find a way to partner with the police department in a more proactive manner than what had been occurring in our neighborhoods in the past when it came to issues on the school grounds after school hours. So I proposed to him, and I already spoke to the superintendent about this as well, about a possibility. I knew about the liaisons that are in all of our schools, not just the high schools. We have police liaisons that are at every one of our elementary schools as well. They're shared at the elementary level between schools, but they do come and hold meetings with the parents regularly. But that being said, we're looking at something like a Scared Straight program for schools to identify students that may have issues and something on the similarity of what we've seen done in other communities to get these kids help.
Thank you. Ms. Audia?
I would recommend to the superintendent that a meeting would be called of the Board of Trustees from Henry Ford College and the school board members from Dearborn Public Schools, as well as all of the administrators in the Dearborn schools. I would also suggest that the police chief and mayor of our city of Dearborn would be at this meeting to assess the needs of our schools, and so that a well-run and efficient program would be in place and implemented.
Thank you. Mr. Bartles?
Some 20 years ago, I sat on a committee with the city, the police, the fire department, shortly after Columbine. And we went in and they developed programs or procedures for what to do in emergency situations. It's always best, and came out in those meetings, it's always best to identify your problems ahead of time and head them off if you can. But that's not always going to happen. Unfortunately, we live in a troubled society. But making an armed fortress out of our schools and scaring kids is not going to educate them. You need a quiet, relaxed, comfortable environment for kids to learn. And I believe we can do that if we just keep working at the problem, and we have been working at it for over 20 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bazzi.
I think this issue needs to be researched a little bit more. What would the increased police presence be? What would it do? If there are police constantly around our students, we run the risk of, if there is a fight that breaks out, is this now going to be a misdemeanor? Do the police have to arrest those students? And whereas it could have been something that would have been handled internally, is it now something that could potentially lead to a criminal record? So I think this is certainly an issue that needs to be researched thoroughly before decisions are made. However, one thing I do believe is that there should be an increased presence when children are being dropped off in the morning, and certainly when they're being picked up in the afternoon, and that is for safety reasons in and around the school. So I would say that I would be interested in learning more about the issue before I came to an opinion on it.
Thank you. Ms. Hyder.
Thank you. I do believe that Dearborn's finest work very, very hard to keep the city safe, as well as the schools. Now, whether the deployment of officers is adequate or not, I really don't have that information. I'm not privileged to it yet, but we really can't afford a security issue in our schools. We would have to have more information to have a solution for this issue, but I do believe that after a detailed review of everything, the aftermath, the after effect, the budgets, and everything, we could find a better solution.
Thank you. Ms. Herring?
I'm not exactly sure how to respond other than let's take a look at why there are problems in the schools. I hesitate to recommend numbers of police officers, but I can say something about what I think some of the reasons have that are affecting the security problems. When you have too many kids in a classroom, when you don't have enough supervision, when you don't have programs that really get the attention of the kids, some of whom are very interested in ideas and some of whom are not, but they're interested in other things. There have to be more programs for the kids. Okay, we all know about bullying, but that also has to do with a lot of other issues in the society as far as people's attitudes. What are kids learning about other children, about other ethnic groups? Because we well know there are big divisions in Dearborn, and we need to speak out against them and make sure the kids are not at each other's throats.
Thank you. Mr. Janot?
Yeah, I'm also really hesitant to turn the schools into virtual jails. I agree that schools need to be nurturing environments, and there need to be many different avenues to engage the students. And in addition to all of the kinds of activities that Marianne was talking about, rather than putting police officers in the schools, I think that relying on something more like conflict resolution teams, if there's problems between the students in the schools, how about counselors and social workers being among the staff at all of the schools who can have discussions with the students and work through all those conflicts?
Thank you. Ms. Karkaba.
This is an issue that definitely needs more research, but understanding the community within the schools, talking to our parents, getting them more involved so they can understand the issues that are occurring in their schools. Having police presence, we understand police officers are there to protect us, and students need to know that they are there for us. They shouldn't be the enemy at all. So there needs to be a concise understanding at that point as well. So giving each other that opportunity to understand what the situations are in the school, how severe they are, how many issues that are occurring in the school as well, needs to be also taken into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mead?
Well, if there ever was an issue that demands a task force, this is one. As a vice president of student services, I had to handle many, many discipline cases. And typically, it's important to apprehend the student as soon as the student is not behaving badly, and then give them due process, because the goal is to turn them around. The goal is not for them to get a record, a police record. The goal is to change their behavior. And so I agree with what you're saying, is that more counseling involved and more social working involved, because a lot of times this happens, this behavior comes about because of where the person is coming from. So I think it's a task force issue. How in heaven's name do you protect all of the students and at the same time give due process to those that are charged.
Thank you, Ms. Pechlikoff. We'll start with you with this next question. Do you support the Common Core standards? Why or why not?
Well, the Common Core standards are here because the state decided that they didn't want to look at No Child Left Behind anymore. The Common Cores, in theory, are allowing us to align our curriculum along a nationwide track that is repeatable, identifiable, that we can measure standard from state to state equally, rather than what No Child Left Behind was giving us, which was a lot of different testing standards that were not even an equal. It also has benchmarking that's internationally recognized, so we know what the students are doing coming in and exiting from a class. That being said, there are some minuses with it. It does only test for math and English at this point in time, and right now the state hasn't even come up with a standardized test that we can use, so we've got some variables in there that are making us difficult.
Thank you. Ms. Audia?
The Common Core state standards were adopted on June 15, 2010 by the Michigan State Board of Education, and their intention is to promote equity in regards to a variety of tools such as textbooks, digital media, teaching materials, and assessment systems, and a variety of policies that support the learners as they learn these new standards. Furthermore, the Common Core state standards are used as an indicator by the educators within the school districts to ensure that all learners have the required knowledge and skills necessary to succeed in college or university degreed programs and in a variety of careers.
Thank you. Mr. Bartles?
Common Core is, or could be, an extremely valuable tool to our school districts. But in my life, I found out that people in Michigan are different than people in Texas or California or New York. You can use a standardized core, but it's only a tool, or should only be a tool. We need to go back to what we used to do, and that's develop what works best for our students and takes care of our students and prepares our students for the world to come. Everybody is different, and there's no way they're ever going to build a Common Core that fits everybody.
Thank you. Ms. Bazzi?
I understand the reason behind the Common Core, and it's to make sure that education is equitable in all areas. I think it's important to have a benchmark. However, in our schools, we have to be able to give our teachers the flexibility to take that benchmark and implement it so that it works best for every child. And I think that the teachers in the districts are doing a good job of doing that. I see they're testing kids for their reading levels and they're putting them in their classes or in their groups. They're testing them for their math levels and they're putting them in their groups. I think you have to have some type of standard that's out there, but you shouldn't judge teachers just on performing up to that standard. You need to incorporate looking at that as well as looking at other things to make sure that that we're getting a fair assessment of what the kids are learning in the classroom.
Ms. Hyder?
Hi. I do agree with Ms. Bazzi and Mr. Bartle that the Common Core is and could be a good tool, but our system is not a cookie cutter system. Our students are all different. Every student reads at a different level and comprehends at a different level and writes at a different level, so they should not be standardized. It is a good system if used in the correct manner.
Ms. Herring?
I think the irony is that the governments, state, federal, on the federal state level, would come up with something called Common Core at the same time when you have such tremendous attacks on public education. We don't live in a society with equitable education. School systems don't have everything the same. Kids coming to the schools are not the same. Historically, testing has been used. The purpose of testing allegedly should be to identify children who are in need of extra help in order to make sure they understand, but historically most testing has been used to screen and classify, and so until we talk about real resources of the society that go to education so the kids of Birmingham, Bloomfield Hills, Dearborn, and Inkster have the best, don't be talking about a Common Core, because it's a sham because it's not a common educational system.
Thank you. Mr. Janot?
Yeah, I'm not, I'm all for common standards, and I think that they can be useful even at a national level, but I am dead set against the Common Core and the way that it is being implemented. To be frank, it's an attack. It's an attack on the students, an attack on the teachers, an attack on the schools. Basically, it was devised by education entrepreneurs like Bill Gates as a way to sell tests and testing materials and test prep materials, and as a way to shove those tests down communities' throats and then convince the communities that their schools have to undergo a complete overhaul when the students invariably do badly on these badly devised tests.
Thank you. Ms. Karkaba.
Thank you. I definitely agree with the fact that we have very good positives with the Common Core. However, when it was developed, the Common Core was, you have to think about who developed these tests. Are they educators? Were they people that had an agenda for our students, to better our students? Our teachers are giving these tests, and when our kids are in school a quarter of the day, our students are testing. And it's almost as if our teachers can't teach anymore. They don't have the ability to implement the teaching method every day, to understand the student, who they are. It does not measure intuitiveness or creativity. It basically tells our students, this is what you have to do, and this is the result we need to get. I understand the process, and it's a great way to measure. However, there is a limit, because we don't have a system where we want to jail our kids. This is school, especially with elementary schools. Elementary schools, it's a time for our students to learn freely and to understand that there is a process in being a child as well.
Thank you. Mr. Mead?
Well, I agree that this is definitely, Common Core is a tool to be used. It seems like it has a very good general idea that everybody, no matter what state they're in, they're going to get common kind of knowledge and skills to get into the economy. But I frankly worry about the students, the anxiety created by all of these standardized tests that have been bought out. And why would we put our students through so much of that? All we want to do is to test them at a reasonable time so that we get some idea what their strengths and weaknesses are so that we can bring about the programs and services that will help them. So it, to me, it's become like a crazy test. Common Core to me means testing all the time, and it just seems to me like that's going to cause way too much anxiety for teachers and for students.
Thank you. Mr. Paulson.
It's state law. We need to accept that fact, and we need to adapt to it. What I believe is we should partner our teachers that teach Common Core classes. That way, if a student is struggling in one area, they can maybe take less time in that area and more time in the other area with the partner teacher. Also, what it'll do is it'll create familiarity with it within the students. That way, if they go through their educational process through those 3 or 4 years, they have that same teacher team, so there's no overlap in teaching, and they know what to expect the next year that they come into school. Because the goal is to be proficient at Common Core and excel at elective level courses.
Thank you. We're going to start this next question with Ms. Adia, and this is going to be a yes or no question, so yes or no. Do you favor a reintroduction of cursive handwriting in grade schools in Dearborn?
Yes.
Mr. Bartles?
Yes.
Ms. Bazzi?
Yes.
Ms. Hyder?
Absolutely.
Ms. Herring?
Yes.
Mr. Janot?
Sure.
Ms. Karkova?
Two yeses. Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Mead?
Yes.
Mr. Paulson?
Absolutely.
Ms. Pechlikov?
Yes.
Okay, from a short question to a long question. Premise, the American Academy of Pediatrics has recommended later high school start times. The district has solicited the athletic conference, and the athletic director has found no barriers for implementing later high school start times. Because of its success in other districts, improving student focus, reducing sleeping in class, reducing depression, improving family life, would you as a board member be willing to lead this effort? Would you help drive this or just give up when someone brings up money? Mr. Bartles?
I don't believe this is a question of money, okay? In all honesty, what is the good start time? If you move it from 7:30 for the high schools, approximately when it is now, to 9 o'clock, will the kids just sleep till 10? Because they stayed up an extra hour at night.
I think that there's a lot more that needs to be done than simply changing the time for a block or all kids. There's some kids that excel in the morning. There's some kids that don't. There's some people that at work are great in the morning, and by the end of the day, they're mediocre-ish. Okay? Students are the same way. I don't think there's a blanket answer for it. We need to look at what we can do and what it would take to satisfy the needs of all of our students.
Thank you. Ms. Bazzi?
Well, we can't ignore the budget factor. We have to look at how much is this cost, because ultimately one of the most important things is our kids are getting the best education possible. And so if taking it an hour behind means that we are actually going to be improving education, then we certainly do need to look at that. However, I can't answer the question now until I see the studies, until I see the statistics, until I see how is this going to affect the parents that are picking them up. We've done this, the hours, the way they are for generations, and before we make a move, and I think this is a big step, we need to research the issue thoroughly and make sure that this is the best thing for our students and it's cost efficient.
Ms. Hyder.
Well, it would really all go back to how much time are we giving them more to sleep in the morning, and how effective is it really going to be? Because high school students after school sometimes have sports and activities. You have to think about how much time do they have to complete these sports, the football team, the basketball team, and how much time do they have to finish homework too. By high school, sophomores, juniors, and seniors are getting after school jobs. We have to consider their lifestyles change after middle school, and we need to accommodate that. They do need more time in the afternoon. Now, again, it all goes back to, it's all a matter of perspective and how effective is it and how cost effective is it.
Thank you. Ms. Herring?
There are tremendous studies that show many things. For example, there should be no night shift work. If you do studies on research on sleep, you know our circadian rhythms, right? That doesn't prevent all the factories running 24/7. We're talking about our kids, right? But that still means that the resources have to be in the schools. So maybe there's more than one set of teachers, more than one shift. You're going to have the schools open early, and they're going to have to stay late, that's true, but it shouldn't mean that teachers and all the support staff have 12-hour days. That's about all I can figure out what to say. I can tell you I teach 7:30 in the morning in college, and a half are comatose. But in the real world, people have to function. So I hesitate to say we're just going to let a few sleep in, and that's it.
And thank you. Mr. Janot?
Yeah, I've seen some of the studies and articles that talk about how a late start time can be useful for high school students in particular. And when I taught high school, I batted that around with my students, mentioning those, and they all liked the idea. Maybe I was inclined to point that out to them because I'm a late riser myself, but at least my circadian rhythm is that way. But I agree that different students are more aware and more awake at different times. I think that our schools should be able to be flexible enough to accommodate different students with different patterns and different learning styles. And again, that comes down to resources and staffing and allowing that to happen.
Thank you. Ms. Karkaba?
If we really look into it, if research does back it, we have to look at the source. We have a large community, the city of Dearborn. We have thousands of students who will be affected, but you have to look at the late starts, how it's affecting them. What do our teachers think? Is it helping improve because we've had late starts? What do our teachers think? They are the ultimate decision makers in whether it's helping them or not. Definitely need more research about this, but we have to do it to actually understand it more and to see if it is actually making a difference. So asking our students, asking our educators, those who are directly involved with us.
Thank you. Mr. Mead?
Well, it seems like this is another task force issue. There's been a lot of articles in the newspaper recently that it would be advantageous for students to start later, especially high school students, because they need adequate sleep in order to process information. Well, I am concerned that, first of all, I don't know all the data, so it'd be kind of foolish to make a statement, but it would be better if I knew more. But I will say this, that when students are in high school, it's really important for them to do something other than their learning, academic learning. It's important for them to do something else. And if they're going to do something else, it's going to be at the end of the day. And if it's going to be at the end of the day, they might miss family dinner. Now, you might think that that's not very important, but I think it's horribly important. So I'd rather that they have their activities before and then they're there for the family dinner.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson.
Well, as being probably the youngest person running, I can provide a little insight into this. When I was in high school, whether it was going to be starting at 11 a.m. or 6 a.m., I'm going to take advantage and sleep as long as I can. In my opinion, if it's not broke, we shouldn't fix it. Kids are going to take advantage of any opportunity they can because they're kids. And people can throw as many studies as they want, but until there's concrete proof that it's actually going to help, I don't really see the point of it.
Thank you. Ms. Pechlikoff?
Well, what everybody doesn't seem to realize is we already tried this. We had a task force, we studied it, and we knew we couldn't financially support a school-wide initiative, so what we did was an experiment, and we gave students who had the opportunity to start later, and we got teachers on board to come in later to try this. There were very few takers, I hate to tell you. They weren't all that interested in the late start time. So right now, what we have going on is the ability for students. And I had pushed this when I was on the board about a flex start time to begin with, giving them other opportunities to make up those credits at a later point in day. So we have many secondary school options where the students can take dual enrollment classes, take online courses that allows them to start their day later and make up those credits in another fashion. So we already offer this in a way that is financially responsible and still gives those students who want to sleep in later that opportunity, and it's here.
Ms. Audia.
Well, once again, I would suggest to the superintendent of the Dearborn Public Schools that a universal meeting would be called amongst all of the cabinet members and curriculum coordinators and administrators of the Dearborn Public Schools, as well as Henry Ford College president and their cabinet coordinators and department chairs. And I would suggest that we would all sit down at the table and create a survey and also do a lot of research to formulate more options on the start times. I know we are already implementing a nice variety at the Henry Ford College for earlier start times and evening classes as well. But once again, we need to come together at a meeting to create more options.
Thank you. I'm sorry to say we're at the end of our question period, so we're going to start our closing statements. And Ms. Bazzi, we're going to start with you. 1 minute.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank the LEAD for this forum, and I want to thank the audience and all the people who are going to be watching this later in time for taking the time to research and learn about the candidates and the issues. My education on work background has taught me how to thoroughly examine the issues and take all things into consideration when making the best choices given any set of circumstances. I am not here to make empty promises. I'm here to tell you and promise you that I will research every single issue and make the best decision possible. I believe in being accessible because I serve you, the constituents. I know I will be held accountable. I will be held accountable to my children for their education, to my friends who are teachers and administrators for their benefits, and to my neighbors for how I'm using their tax dollars. I know I can balance all those competing interests in a way that will benefit the city and help make Dearborn the best place for education. When you go to the polls come November 4th and you are asked to choose three people for the Dearborn Board of Education, I ask that you vote for Miriam Bazzi for Dearborn Board of Education for one of those seats. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hyder.
Thank you to the League of Women Voters for giving us this opportunity to be heard. I'm very happy with the education that my daughters are getting, and this is one of the reasons why I stayed in Dearborn and decided to raise my family here. Student success is my number one goal, and Dearborn Public Schools have paved the way for many successful graduates, including myself. I want to be a part of this continued success and growth of the district. Many of the board members that came before us are responsible for this success. Unfortunately, three of our current board members are retiring, and we have three open positions. So when November 4th comes around, please make Nafaila Haidar one of your votes.
Thank you. Ms. Herring? While campaigning, I have heard the concerns of people. Class sizes are too big, especially at the grade school level. Cuts in public library and after-school programs. Cuts of teachers and support staff. Doubling up workloads. Increased hiring of part-time teachers with no benefits at the college level. Privatizing jobs like custodians. Cuts in the hours for food service workers. Increased health care costs. Increased tuition costs. I am against any cuts to public education programs, job services, and benefits. But the future of education, whether it's in Dearborn or Inkster or Ann Arbor, doesn't get decided on the school board. It gets decided by money, federal money, state money. And up until now, the political and economic decisions have been made higher up than the board and have given away, and those decisions have given away public monies in the form of tax breaks to corporations and bailouts for banks, now for increasing the war expenditures. The future, thank you. I want to fight it.
Mr. Janot?
As I said earlier, I stand with Marianne Herring for a working class policy and a working class fight. The trillions of dollars of wealth produced by working people and held by the banks and corporations should be used to protect our standard of living. Every child should have an excellent education from preschool through college. And it should be free from preschool through college. And it can be. The wealth is there. If we say that education is necessary in this society, then it should be a social priority and a social right. Together we can do it. It will take a big fight, but the working class is up to that fight. The first step is to raise our voices together in this election and to say we refuse to accept these attacks. Vote for me, Ken Janot, and Marianne Herring, if you agree.
Ms. Kirkaba?
We as a community have a duty to our schools. In order to understand the issues that are facing our individual schools, we have to be present. We have to be proactive. We must go to the schools. We must be proactive and talk to the educators. What concerns do they have? What are the unique challenges that are facing their school? Because regardless of whatever issues we have to understand that every single school is a separate entity and every school has its own community. How do we get the parents involved? We need to talk to the parent liaisons, get them involved. Have they talked to the parents? What can we do to get parent involvement more alive or to have a more prevalence in our community? Because we know that parent involvement isn't an issue in every school, but there are also issues that are unique to itself for every school. On November 4th, I hope you would make the choice to vote, make that conscious decision to make our board a better solidified and more prevalent place for us so we can have a voice. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mead?
Thanks to the League of Women Voters for this forum and giving the candidates an opportunity to demonstrate their abilities and interests. This is a unique board because it's a P through 14 board. There is no other board in the state like it. There are very few boards in the whole country that have a P through 14 board. So it's really advantageous for putting together programs and services that are continuous and that are seamless. So we've made great progress with dual enrollment and with early college and the whole business of dealing with students who are in remediation. We need to focus through the whole system to get students to the ability level to handle knowledge and skills that will allow them to get into the economy.
Thank you. Mr. Paulson?
My intention is to close the educational gap through a multiple level approach, adapting old techniques to new ones. Proper cooperation among all levels needs to be achieved as to not push one problem to a different direction so you can attack it from all different directions to take care of it. These problems must be addressed at the social, economic, classroom, and corporate partnership level. To somewhat paraphrase Albert Einstein, my goal as a trustee is not to teach, but to provide the best environment for learning to occur.
Thank you. Ms. Petchlikoff?
On November 4th, there will be a number of choices made that will impact our city for years to come. My years of practical experience, civic involvement, and institutional knowledge provides me with insights on the bigger picture for a successful public school system that balances fiscal responsibility with a comprehensive education, maximizing every student's individual potential, ensuring their future achievements, and our visions of a vital community. Raising the quality of our schools raises the quality of our city. I promise to continue to work with our students, our families, schools, and neighborhoods to provide the accountability, resourcefulness, and direction that Dearborn deserves. I ask that you consider my proven record of service and return me, Mary Petlichkoff, to a seat at the table, Dearborn Board of Education.
Thank you, Ms. Audia.
Being a board member requires the ability to inform everyone, remain open-minded, respect all ideas and criticisms, rely on the facts, follow the agenda, bylaws, and board policies, uphold the laws, equity, equality, and a balanced budget, vote on new policies, increase active participation via community service projects, assist with the decision-making process by defining goals, developing options, combining services, and promoting more classes in technology, ESL, and U.S. citizenship that will sustain accountability and increase the learner's academic achievement and proactive citizenship. If elected on November 4th, I, Michelle Audia, would successfully perform the duties of school board member. Thank you, and please vote on Election Day.
Mr. Bartles?
I would be very honored if the people, when they vote on Election Day, vote for Roger Bartles for the school board. I am a true advocate of the people and the kids. I have no personal agenda in this. I simply want to make it better for our city and our students. Thank you.
Thank you. To the candidates, the League thanks you for your participation. The Dearborn voters have a tough decision on November 4th. We appreciate the commitment it takes to run for public office. To the Dearborn schools, we want to say thank you for hosting and taping this public service event. And to the audience, thank you for your interest in the candidates who are running for your school board and for your attention. Information on all the races and ballot proposals can be found online at vote411.org. We encourage you to learn what's on the ballot before you vote. Please vote in all three sections of the ballot: partisan, nonpartisan, and ballot proposals. The polls will be open on Tuesday, November 4th from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Absentee ballots are available from the city clerk's office. Above all, don't forget to vote. This concludes our forum for the Dearborn School Board. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. That was the candidate forum from September 30th, 2014. Held by the League of Women Voters in Dearborn Public Schools. It was recorded by them, and they gave us very kindly a nice audio copy to share with you today. I think this is one of the most important elections for our kids. Not only is there three new school board candidates who are going to come in, none of the 11 on the ballot are incumbents currently. None of them are currently serving. And so it's going to be bringing new ideas and new personalities into the school board for the next 6 years. Yeah. So it's very important that if you're a Dearborn voter, you make your choices. Try to find out about the candidates in whatever ways you can. These people don't have a lot of money to have a lot of advertising, mailings, and so forth. So